Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. A 2019 study conducted by Cigna and surveyed 10,000 adults that found 3 out of 5 Americans are lonely. Already, more Americans struggle with loneliness than other major public health crises like smoking, diabetes, and obesity. And that was before a major global pandemic forced us into social distancing and increased isolation. And it's kept many of us away from family, friends, and loved ones as the country continues to try to curb the spread of COVID-19. And while loneliness is perhaps a more invisible and intangible health issue, the effects are tangible and significant. Some studies have shown that the health impacts that loneliness has on our lifespans is equal to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And loneliness increases the rate of early death by 26%. Joining us now to talk about loneliness is Julianne Holt-Lunstead. She's a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Brigham Young University. Hello, Julianne. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi. Thank you.
Also joining us is Dr. Carla Parasinoto. She's associate professor of medicine and associate chief for geriatrics clinical programs at the University of California, San Francisco. Good morning, Carla, and thank you for coming on the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And we also have Dr. Ramona James, director of the Master's Program in Counseling and Psychotherapy at the Institute for Clinical Social Work in Chicago. Ramona, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me as well.
And listeners, as ever, we would love for you to join our conversation today. We wonder if you could go back in time before the pandemic, what advice would you give yourself about how to prepare for the isolation and loneliness ahead? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. The phone lines are open. Again, the number is 800-222-9455. Of course, you can always tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. But we would love to hear from you at 800-222-9455. And we'll also hear what some of you had to say to that question about going back in time, giving yourself advice from our texting group later in our conversation. Juliana, as you heard, Julianne, as you heard from the study I mentioned in the introduction, 3 in 5 Americans are lonely. Has this gotten worse during the pandemic?
Much like the virus, we're still learning a lot as the situation evolves. There are some surveys that have suggested that this problem is indeed getting worse, with some surveys suggesting that this is, that loneliness is increasing by 20 to 30%. While other surveys have suggested that perhaps people are actually a bit more resilient than we expected. However, that survey was done at the very beginning of the pandemic, and it's hard to know whether people are able to remain resilient long term. And so, of course, we're continuing to study this as the situation evolves.
And Carla, you're a doctor who's done research on loneliness and social isolation. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the idea of loneliness as a public health crisis.
Yeah, I would echo what Julianne said also in terms of what we're seeing during the pandemic is that we're seeing different patterns. And I think there's still a lot to be learned. As someone said yesterday, you know, what we're seeing is the scientific method being happening in real time. And what we mean by this being a public health crisis or a public health issue is that the health effects as a result of both loneliness and isolation, either together or separate, are pretty profound in terms of how they affect us as individuals in terms of our health, and also in terms of the economic costs that this is inflicting on us from a healthcare perspective. What we know is that the effects really affect all parts of our life as humans, whether that be our cardiovascular health, our mental health, our cognitive health, our social health. And this is not something that we are routinely taught in medical school. I'm not sure if it's something that's taught in social work programs as well. And this is why it's so imperative, is that the magnitude is pretty great, yet we have not systematically found a way to address this as a public health problem.
Well, let's talk about some of those effects. Julianne, in 2015, you published an analysis of one of those study of studies, 70 studies, I think, on loneliness involving 3.4 million people looking at the effects of loneliness. Can you tell us what you found and how much exactly loneliness affects our health?
We wanted to know just how what the magnitude of this effect is, right? Because many factors can influence our health and ultimately our lifespan and risk for premature mortality. And so we did do this major undertaking of looking what the cumulative scientific evidence showed. And so what we found was that loneliness was associated with a 26% increased risk of earlier death, social isolation at 29%, and living alone at 32%. And importantly, this was controlling for other kinds of factors that we know would impact risk for earlier mortality, like age and initial health status. As well as factors that may be potentially confounded with isolation and loneliness, such as depression. And so these were shown to, so social isolation, loneliness, and living alone were found to independently predict premature mortality. So what this suggests is that this is something that, of course, we should be taking very seriously for our health, given this overall magnitude.
Wow. Dr. Ramona James, I want to bring you into the conversation now. We've heard about some of the research on loneliness. As I understand, you work more on the clinical side as the director of the master's program in counseling and psychotherapy at the Institute for Clinical Social Work in Chicago. How can you address loneliness in a clinical setting? It seems to me more than any other disease, there's no pill necessarily. It's not something you can necessarily talk people out of. How do you help people when they come in and this is the what's afflicting them?
So there's a couple of things that someone can do outside of going to see a clinician. Because if the loneliness becomes overwhelming, I do suggest that someone go and get some professional assistance. But if you are able to change your normal, if you're able to change something that you've been doing all of the time and haven't had a change, and it's not doing what you wanted to do, if it's not giving you the desired results, then change your normal. Do something to be flexible and be open to new ideas and different activities. And I know it could be a little difficult in the pandemic, but there are ways that you can participate in open groups, maybe in your block club, attend different open air events, and that way you can still feel safe. Also, I think that people should get to know themselves. Sometimes we don't take the time to get to know ourselves because once you get to know yourself, you'll be able to be open again to reach out to others, to find some new activities and different people to participate with. Other things could be get in touch with loved ones and old friends. Sometimes we moved away or we lost touch with people for various reasons. And then this would be an opportunity if you're feeling lonely to reach out to them and try to reconnect with them. And then finally, I suggest that people volunteer or participate in community events online or in person. Many community organizations now need that additional help and support. And there are different resources available like volunteermarch.org. That's a resource that's available to people if you wanted to volunteer and participate in community organization events.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about loneliness as a public health crisis. Our guests are Dr. Ramona James, who's director of the master's program in counseling and psychotherapy at the Institute for Clinical Social Work in Chicago, Dr. Carla Parisinotto, associate professor of medicine and associate chief for geriatrics at clinical programs at the University of California, San Francisco, and Julianne Holt-Lunstad, who's professor of psychology and neuroscience at Brigham Young University. Carla, much of your work deals with the effects of loneliness on the elderly. And Illinois has the seventh highest population of adults who are older than 65, almost 2 million people. And with about 100,000 of them are in nursing homes, long-term care facilities. Can you talk a little bit about how loneliness affects older people in particular, and any particular concerns you might have about the pandemic and older people who are, I would imagine, increasingly isolated because of the risk factors associated with the disease?
I think thank you for that question. And I think one of the things that's important to note is the huge heterogeneity amongst older adults. You know, we have a tendency to break in or break down the younger age groups into 10-year lifespans or 10-year chunks of time, but somehow we categorize all older adults into everyone over 65. Yet there's a huge range of difference in terms of older adults, in terms of their ability to access technology, how functionally able they are, and their living situation. But there are things that happen in older age that put us at risk for loneliness and isolation, but at the same time can make us resilient. And those things are, for example, changes in work status, loss of partners that happen as we, that may happen as we get older, sensory impairments, hearing and vision changes that can affect our ability to interact with others. So those are some of the risk factors. And I think you're pointing out people living in long-term care facilities, but whether that be nursing homes or what we call assisted livings or boarding care, is a huge concern right now. Unfortunately, we have not had good national guidelines or even international guidelines about what to do with folks in long-term care. And what that means is that the default has been to have these long-term care locations be almost completely devoid of social contact in an effort to protect people in the now. So the idea that if I maintain folks isolated, I can protect them from the virus. Yet we're doing that potentially by placing them at risk for the long-term effects. You know, there's worry about the loss of function in terms of even just loss of muscle mass as people are spending more time in their rooms. Very concerned about the mental health outside of loneliness and isolation because of depression and anxiety sometimes going hand in hand. And so what we need going forward is really more, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but it's often true, more research to understand what is going to happen over the course of the pandemic and creative solutions, as one of your other guests said, about how can we maintain people socially connected while we're having to physically distance. But I think we have to remember that physically distancing does not mean zero contact. And that's unfortunately where a lot of the messaging has been and why so many of our older adults are increasingly isolated.
Okay, I will take this note to heart and say hello to my 104-year-old grandmother in an assisted living facility now, and I promise I will call you later today.
There you go.
Yeah,
good.
Let's shift to a different age group, though. Julianne, I want to ask, there's a surprising statistic from a recent NPR article that you were quoted in. People who are 18 to 22 years old when surveyed had the highest average loneliness score on an 80-point scale measuring loneliness. What does this tell us? And what do we know about loneliness and how it affects people based on age, gender, location, culture, things like that?
First off, we should recognize that loneliness and social isolation can affect anyone at any age. And there has been a lot of attention focused on older adults, which of course is very important. But what is, I think, surprising to many is to see the high prevalence rates among adolescents and young adults, or what people are referring to as Gen Z. There have now been several surveys that have suggested that this age group may have the highest prevalence of loneliness. And so, of course, there's concern about why that is the case. And of course, like almost every issue, it's complex and there's probably no one single factor. But one of the things that we can keep in mind is that the definition of loneliness is the discrepancy between one's desired and actual level of social connection. And so at this phase of life, there's the general norm that your social circle should be expanding. And factors that may influence that expectation, you know, including social media, you know, I'm not going to give a simplistic, explanation that it's all driven by that, but certainly that can contribute to those expectations that may be driving part of this loneliness. But of course, what we found is that life transitions are a risk factor. And so just like Carla mentioned, for older adults, retirement, leaving home for the first time is another important life transition that may disrupt one's social network that can trigger loneliness. But of course, you know, with the pandemic, and I'm a university professor, and so I work with college students, and I see how as universities are transitioning to online, and many students may not be actually having that life transition, what kinds of effects will that have as well in terms of development? And so this pandemic is certainly raising lots of questions, and certainly we want to research this to better understand the factors that contribute so that we can better address this among this age group as well as across age groups.
Ramona, just we have to take a break in about a minute, but I wonder if you just have a quick response to the idea, you know, of how you might approach in a therapy setting different approaches for somebody in that 18 to 20 year old age group versus an older person.
I think just quickly, I agree with what everyone has said on the panel so far. The other thing I think about with younger people is that they need to know that they are secure and safe, especially if they have a family support. Family support is going to be a great help for young people that are in that age group of 18 to 20. If they don't have family support, then try to find a mentor or someone maybe at your local church or maybe at a community center to assist and to help them, because they definitely are feeling lonely at this point, especially if they're going away to college for the first time and they're not able to interact with their family anymore, or if they are stuck at home because of the pandemic and not able to go away to school, they have some different feelings that other young people may not have had before.
Okay, we're going to continue this conversation on loneliness after a short break. We've got some texts from listeners. I want to remind you, you can always join our conversation, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st. Stay with us. More to come after a short break. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're having a conversation about loneliness in the pandemic. We're speaking with a number of experts, Professor of Psychology Julianne Holt-Lunstad from Brigham Young, Dr. Carla Parasinoto, Associate Professor of Medicine and Associate Chief for the Geriatrics Clinical Programs at the University of California, San Francisco, and Dr. Ramona James, who's Director of the Master's Program in Counseling and Psychotherapy at the Institute for Clinical Social Work in Chicago. I want to read a couple of texts from listeners from our Text the 21st texting group. The question we asked was, if you could go back in time before the pandemic, what advice would you give yourself about how to prepare for the loneliness ahead? Marlene from Urbana responded, quote, I don't know if there really is a way to prepare. I think one just has to feel those feelings and then move on, because it's the reality on a global level for a lot of people. Although families can feel cooped up together too, they may actually need space. I think if you feel alone, then turn it into something constructive. They say reaching out is the cure for loneliness. It doesn't have to be big. Do a small constructive thing in your immediate environment / life without expectation, and it will feel better. Works for me, close quote. Meanwhile, Justin from Rockford simply responded, it's going to be a long year. There's no shortcuts. Ramona, I'm curious to hear your response to those comments.
I would agree. It's going to be a long year. But as we said earlier, there are things that we have to adjust to. We have to be able to adjust to, and we say this all the time, to our new normal. And how we adjust to it is the way that we have to be flexible and open and then realize different ways of meeting and connecting with other people. There's a couple resources available for people to connect with others, like Next Door Digest. That's a great tool that you can use for from your neighborhood to find out different activities that are going on in your neighborhood so that you won't feel so isolated, but you'll also be able to connect with others anonymously in your own community. So there are different things that we have to tap into now in order for us to not feel so isolated. Like a previous person spoke on the panel, sometimes we think that we have to be isolated and not communicate with others. But this is the time where you need to communicate with others and figure out different ways that you can do that.
I want to quickly read another text we got from our Text the 21st group. Jan from Savoy says she would set regular Skype, FaceTime, or Zoom calls with friends. She says, in part, nothing can replace the hugs of in-person contact, but seeing folks does help. Also, start walking daily. Speak to everyone you meet. You may make some new friends in the neighborhood or use your walking time to make a cell phone call and talk with someone while you're walking. If possible, develop a hobby that'll keep you occupied and focused for long stretches of time. Reach out if you start to struggle with the loneliness. We are in this together. We don't have to be lonely while we are alone. Julianne, Jan describes a few ways here how she wards off loneliness. In my household, we've started Pizza Fridays, Zoom calls with grandma and grandpas, and the brother-in-law in who's out of the country, even like we're seeing him more now over Zoom than we have in real life before the pandemic. How effective are humans at adjusting to the circumstances on something like loneliness, and are there maybe actually some silver linings in how we've been forced to connect through the disconnection of social distancing and the pandemic?
Yeah. First of all, I should say that I think she's doing a great job of coping with this. And, we're limited in terms of the kinds of ways that we can connect. And ideally, we would want to connect socially in a variety of ways. And I love the fact that she mentioned that she missed hugs. I think that's one of the things that many of us are missing most is, when are we going to be able to hug others again? And that there is certainly health benefits to even physical touch, but with the tools that we can use, having a set schedule is something that is important. But some of my own research has shown how important that social support can have in mitigating some of the negative physiological effects that occur when we are under stress or are isolated. And that, in fact, we will, in some studies we had exposed an entire group of participants to the exact same stressor, but those who had more supportive relationships in their network were much less reactive to the stress. And so what this suggests is that the perceived availability of social support can mitigate some of these effects. And so what that means is having someone that you can count on, that you know is available to you if needed. And you can also be a source of support to others, reaching out and seeing how others are doing. As this person mentioned, giving people a call or texting. Mm-hmm. And some research even suggests that providing support to others may be even more beneficial than receiving support. So these are some, what she's doing has some scientific backing to it.
You get what you give, I guess, and we'll have to leave it there. Our guests have been Julianne Holt-Lunstad, professor of psychology and neuroscience at Brigham Young University, Dr. Ramona James, director of the master's program in counseling and psychotherapy at the Institute for Clinical Social Work in Chicago, and Dr. Carla Parasinoto, associate professor of medicine and associate chief for geriatrics clinical programs at the University of California, San Francisco. Thank you all so much for being with us here on the 21st today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.